listening to the Food Talk Show on Channel Radio. It's the Food Talk Show on Channel Radio with me, Paul Andrews, and the absolutely lovely Sue Nelson. Hello, Sue.
Hello, Paul.
How are you?
I've been on holiday for 2 weeks.
I can tell. Do you know how I can tell?
Is it because I look gorgeous and brown?
Something like that.
Yeah, gorgeous, that, gorgeous and brown.
That, and you're looking incredibly smug.
I'm looking very, very smug, and I'm feeling really energised, and I definitely needed a holiday. I had some great food out there, obviously.
Did you? I'm going to talk about that in a minute, but first let's discuss the permatan.
It's not. I do feel slightly orange. But it's all real. It's completely
real. It's real, though,
yeah,
isn't
and
it?
There's not many white bits either, but you don't want to know that.
I don't want to know that.
No, no, you don't.
So you went orange naturally.
I am a natural orange colour.
Are you?
Yes, I am. But it was pretty hot. So I was in Portugal in a place near Tavira, mm-hmm. which is a lovely Roman town, actually towards the Spanish border.
I was going to say, that's to the left of Faro on the Algarve, isn't it?
To the right. So you come out of Faro Airport and you turn right,
okay,
not left.
Yeah, okay.
Most people turn left. And it's a lovely area, not very touristy. Great, great fish, though. They have a marvellous, marvellous fish market in Olhão. And it's about the size of a football pitch. And it is, there's hundreds and hundreds of people selling the freshest fish that has just come out of the sea that morning. Actually.
Sardines.
Yeah, mackerel though, really great mackerel, all sorts of stuff. Bought loads and loads of lovely, lovely fresh fish on the barbecue, in the sun. What could be better?
And did you have a cataplana?
I didn't. I have had it before, and it's very good.
People are looking at me incredulously, let's say that.
What, that you would eat something that healthy?
No. I'm not sure everyone knows what it is, actually. Cataplana. Everyone's on it.
Go on then, explain it.
Well, it's basically a Portuguese version of paella, really, isn't it? At the end of the day.
It's fish stewy,
in my opinion. Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's all good. Mm. But while I was on holiday for 2 weeks, you were at the Allergy and Free From show. I can never say that. Free From show.
We were.
I listened to the podcast while I was abroad, because you can do that from our website. Mm. And sounded a really interesting show. Loads and loads of visitors. Very, very busy.
It was incredibly busy. It was a really good show. It was at Olympia. It was over 3 days, and it was so busy, so it was unbelievable. I think we ended up interviewing something like 33 people or something.
Wow. Which, and all interesting, I'm sure.
And it was really all good stuff. Mm. It was really all good stuff. And I did go for a wander around the exhibition.
Of course.
I got thoroughly lost. I couldn't find my way back to our stand. That's how big the exhibition was, and I'm not fibbing.
It's huge.
I really did get lost in the exhibition hall and couldn't find my way back.
There's some real innovation going on in food at the moment.
Absolutely.
And loads of people really interested in food and starting their own businesses, and good luck to them.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's really, really good.
Oh, some incredible stuff. Absolutely incredible stuff. Things that, you know.
I heard the one about the crickets. So that was interesting.
Yeah.
Insects.
It was really good, actually. And funnily enough, I have a bit of a history with crickets anyway. And this lot were a bit wimpy, in my opinion. They were making health food bars out of crickets.
Is that the cricket dust that you can get, as opposed to?
Yeah, it was cricket.
It looks like a cricket.
And that was the thing. They were using cricket powder.
Yeah.
Whereas I have eaten just
proper crickets. Yeah.
And scorpions, as it happened, but I wasn't too fussed about scorpions. But the crickets were fabulous.
Yeah, really nice and crunchy. Yeah, I've seen.
Yeah, I have roasted crickets, and somebody brought them in for me to taste on a show. And I ate a couple, and everybody else was going, ooh, don't like the look of that.
And you whiffed a lot, didn't you?
And I ate the lot. While I was talking to him, I just wasn't thinking about it, because they tasted like peanuts.
I did some tweets back and forwards with Thomasina Myers. I don't know if you know her. She was Master Chef, and she sort of runs is part of the Oaxaca chain. She's really big on Mexican food. Mm. And she's a real advocate of insects, because clearly we can't feed the whole of the world's population as we go forward in meat, and obviously insects are an amazing source of protein, and she feels quite strongly that the insects are the food of the future. We've got to get over our natural aversion to them.
Well, you're absolutely right. Interestingly, the protein level versus the calorie content of insects is incredibly good. Mm. It's high protein, low calorie, Obviously, to farm crickets, locusts, beetles, and other things like that takes up a lot less resource than sheep, cows, and chickens.
Yeah, a lot less damaging, I would imagine.
Yeah,
as well.
Exactly. And the taste is fine. It's just a cultural thing.
I think so. I think you're right.
Yeah.
Well, that was all very interesting, but I think I'm going to tell you about the show today.
Let's talk about that.
I'm quite excited, and and it's really great because it's mostly alcohol, which you don't touch, so that's great because it's more for
me. You've done it to me again, haven't you?
I have, yes.
You've set up a show where I can't indulge anything.
Exactly, but trust me, I'll do it on your behalf.
Thank you, Sue.
So we've got...
you are so kind.
I know. We've got Toast Ale here, who've got a really interesting and rather different story. So not any old beer, I can tell you, a really, really interesting ale. So we're going to have a chat with Julie Preble. We've got a little slot from the Allergy and Free From show.
We have.
Which is the Juice Shots. Try saying that.
Yeah.
Juice Shots. And that's another very interesting story.
What I found is saying the whole thing is hardest.
Yeah,
the Allergy and Free From show with Juice Shots.
No, I can't say
it's not good. It's not good.
No way I can do that. And then we've got the lovely Sarah Ward, who makes cocktail ice cream. And her company is brilliantly called Boozy Udders, which I like a lot. and she makes cocktail ice cream. And obviously cocktails are big at the moment. But unusually, not ice cream that is flavoured with cocktails. It's got the real thing in it. So I'm really looking forward to tasting.
Is that what we're saying?
I am really looking forward to tasting that.
Cool. So I bet you are.
Yeah. So just to start, I was going to tell you a little bit about food waste because Toast Ale, the whole company was set up because they are very, very concerned about food waste, as we all should be. Actually.
Absolutely.
And you and me, Paul, have talked a lot about, you know, what is it about food waste when we've got so many families going to food banks? It's crazy. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And in the UK, we have 15 million tons of food waste every year. And bread, which I didn't know, is the worst offender. Bread is the thing that gets thrown away the most.
Can I just say something about bread as well? I'm not a big fan of processed bread, but sometimes there's not much you can do about that. You have to have a loaf of bread in the house in case I wake up in the middle of the night and need toast or something. Yeah, but I've noticed just recently it goes off ever so quickly.
It's been very hot recently, and that doesn't help, I think. 44%, I mean, this is awful. Nearly half of all our bread in the UK that we produce is thrown away. Nearly half of it.
It's a good job I don't live in America, because 100% of it would get thrown away.
It's horrible. It's too sweet.
Because it's horrible stuff.
Yeah. So more and more entrepreneurs and green activists are looking to set up businesses to utilise waste. So, I mean, I've been involved in talking to BioBean, who use coffee grinds to turn... They turn coffee grinds into biofuels, and lots of people do waste protein into animal feed. So there's lots and lots of people really thinking about how we can use food waste. So it'd be great to talk about Julie about that.
Absolutely.
Should we have a little bit of
cheesy tunage?
I know you're dying to do this. I dread to think what it is. Do you know, I really haven't missed this bit, Paul, for 2 weeks.
Morning, all.
Oh dear!
I'd like to tell you about.
It had to be, didn't it? I'm sorry. That was just so. It was so predictable.
3 or 4 months old at the time.
Toast.
I didn't really know what I wanted, and if I did, I wouldn't have been able to tell anybody, because all I could do was gurgle. So I sat there in my high chair, thinking one day, looking at my tray and thinking, what I'd give for a meal on there. So I started looking around to see what I could have. I was rubbing my eggy soldier in my head, trying to think, and then I looked in the corner, and there's a little bread bin with its mouth open, just staring at me like. And then I looked in and I saw bread. I thought, oh yeah, I'll have toast. A little piece of toast. Well, then I started getting older. I hated this, I hated that. Expensive steak was ludicrous, and cafes couldn't cater for the finer things in life. The upper crust was not for me, I could tell that. So I'd go back home, switch a kitchen light on, put the grill on, slip a slice under, and have toast. A little piece of toast. Because there's so much to choose from. There's brown bread, white bread, all sorts of wholemeal bread. It comes in funny packages with writing on the side. But it doesn't matter which one you have, because when you cut the crust off, have it with marmalade or butter, cheese, tomatoes, beans, banana, or chocolate. If you're strange, it doesn't really matter. Oh no, it all goes with toast. Just toast. I'm going to think about it some. That's toast.
toast. That's toast. Just toast. Well, I go down the supermarket with me basket in me, and I'm walking from one counter to another trying to find a bread store, but I can't find it anywhere. And then I bump into a mother with a baby in a basket, and she says, oh, look, you start him off again. I'll come down with a little bit of peace and quiet to get some bread to go home to make toast. Just toast. I like toast. Yeah, but I don't half like toast. Okay, scrape that toast, boys. That's toast. Yeah, just toast. I can't think about it anymore. I've got to go and have some. It's no good.
Hey, listen, I'm getting a bit brand off staying in here.
Me too.
Should we go and have some toast?
It's a good idea.
Why not?
Okay.
I've got the grill on.
Got any brown bread?
Yeah.
I've got wholemeal bread.
Toast.
Wheatmeal bread.
Toast.
All sorts of toast. Let's go.
Sorry about that.
I haven't heard that for ages.
Sorry, sorry. That was so obvious, wasn't it?
Yes.
Sorry. Sorry, Julie.
So we were talking about waste bread. I don't know if you know, Paul, there's something called the Brussels Beer Project, who created Babyloni, a beer made from bread based on a 7,000-year-old Babylonian recipe.
Wow.
And this guy called Tristram Stewart decided to set up something similar in the UK.
Okay.
He's an international award-winning author, speaker, campaigner, expert on environmental and social impacts of food waste. And his company is Toast Ale. And we have the head toaster here, which I'd love to be called the head toaster as my job title. So we have Julie Prebble.
Hello.
Hello, Julie. Hi, head Julie. Toaster, eh?
Head
Hello.
Toaster.
Thanks
head
for
toaster.
Having me, and thanks for that great tune.
Yeah,
it's a pleasure.
Sure,
yeah.
So it's my alarm clock every morning.
Is it? Is it your ringtone on your phone as well?
Yeah, toast. So you make the UK's first bread to beer ale using fresh surplus bread.
Exactly.
Tell us all about that.
Yes.
Tell us all about it.
Will do. I don't actually make it myself.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not the brewer. We partner with craft brewers
right, okay.
to make great beer.
Oh, okay.
And Sue, you mentioned the Brussels Beer Project.
Yep.
And when Tristram discovered Babylon, he realised, wow, actually, you can make a great beer with bread.
Mm.
So let's try and do it for three reasons. Let's use up some of the bread that's going to waste, which is nearly half. And in fact, it's about a slice in every bottle of beer.
Oh, right. A whole okay. slice?
Yeah.
A whole slice.
It's
wow.
not an insignificant amount of bread. So we replace around a third of the barley with bread.
Right. And where do you get your bread from? You're saying waste bread. What does that mean? I mean, because I know that people like Pret and, you know, give their sandwiches away at the end of the day. Is it that type of thing?
It's not bread that's been made into a sandwich. It's the bread itself.
They scrape the prawns off before they put it in the beer. I sauce that out.
No. So it's clean bread. It's day fresh bread, and it will come from a variety of sources. If it's rained that day, a bakery, bakery's trade will be significantly reduced, and yet they've planned the next day's bake. And right. So our earliest brews were from a series of artisan bakers where we had an army of volunteers collecting whole loaves of bread.
Can I just ask, does it all have to be wholemeal bread? I mean, is it going to make a difference to the flavour if it's white bread, brown bread, granary bread?
Good question.
This is Sarah Ward from Boozy Udders. Hello. Who's taking a huge interest.
I'm interested.
Taking a huge interest in this.
Well, I like both toast and ale, so I'm right in here.
Good combination.
Right, good. A new customer. We have made our beers with all of the breads that you've mentioned. So a plain bread, a wholemeal bread, a granary bread. We're avoiding at the moment breads with seeds or inclusions like a fruit or vegetable because we believe they'll impart some flavour.
Yeah, ruin the taste profile.
And potentially the oils in some of those components will potentially affect the head.
Mm. I'm interested. Sorry, as I explained, I'm teetotal, so I didn't drink your beer, but I did smell it.
We haven't tasted it yet, Paul. We haven't tasted it. We're dying to, but we haven't tasted it yet.
But I smelt it, and it really reminded me of something. And then when you said something there, it clicked. It's barley wine. It's a barley-based beer, isn't it? You said you're using barley in it, and that's what I could smell.
Yes, malted barley. So we replace about a third of that with our bread.
And so before we taste, sorry, Paul.
I was just going to say it.
So explain how you collect this bread all around the country. There must be a huge logistical. Method of finding all this stuff.
Indeed. So I referred to our earliest batches where we had an army of volunteers in East London because our brews were in Hackney, collecting that bread that evening. We took it to a facility. We toasted it all, sliced it, toasted it.
You seriously toast it?
Yes,
really?
We did.
She's the head toaster.
I didn't know that was true. I just thought
what
it was like a good
burned?
Name. Yeah.
What happens if you burn it?
Well, no, we're careful not to burn it because... We don't want burn bread in our beer and we don't want to throw that bread away. We've rescued it. It would be ironic then to not look after it.
So what you're saying here, Julie, really is what you've done is made breakfast. Is what you've done here. You've made breakfast in a bottle.
Well, indeed. I mean, they say beer is liquid bread.
Exactly.
I mean, the synergies are fantastic. And going back to the Brussels Beer Project, it's not a new idea. It's a very ancient way of preserving the life of these calories.
So can we taste it?
Why not?
She's so desperate. She's so desperate to get her jobbers around it.
The reason is, Sarah and I are just looking at it and saying what a beautiful colour is. If I can describe it, it almost looks like a whiskey. In terms of colour.
It's
very,
colour.
Very amber.
Rich amber, gold, with golden colour. Tinges, hints in it. It's beautiful.
And as Paul was saying, it's got a very, very wheaty smell, which I'm guessing you would expect. I've got bread in it.
A maltiness coming through.
I'm going to have a little
taste
now.
Yes. Cheers.
Cheers.
Mm. Well, they seem to be enjoying it, listeners. So they're giving it a good go anyway.
Well,
I'm absolutely loving it. Mm. It's very, very good.
Mm. It's a very malty taste, actually. A very malty taste, I think, and slightly sour, which I personally like.
Oh, great.
Slightly
I've got
sour.
Two customers in the room.
Funnily enough, it does remind me of a very good single malt whiskey in a strange way. And I also worked in whiskey in my time. Mm. And not just the look of it, but actually the intensity of the flavours. Mm. They're delicious.
Mm. What's the proof of it? Is it very strong?
5%.
So that's not that strong, it's but it's decent.
I mean, we designed it, it's a pale ale. We wanted it to be a really popular style of beer and something that you could have one or two of an evening and it to become ultimately your beer of choice.
Sure.
And where are you selling it at the moment? I know you're very London-based, aren't you?
We are at the moment because that's where we were born, in Hackney. So online, listeners can buy it online. At our website there, and online also we'll show our bricks and mortar stockists, which you're right, are at the moment are London based, but we do have a lovely business up in Perthshire who got in touch and said, we love what you're doing, we'd love to stock the product. And I said, we'd love to stock the product, but you're so far away. How do we get it to you?
Doesn't make it economical.
Let's wait until we're brewing somewhere closer. And she said, I've got someone coming down, they'll come and collect it.
Oh,
so we've actually got a stockist in Scotland, which is fantastic too.
Very good. And all the profits from the beer go to the charity Feedback.
That's right.
That's an amazing business model where you're rescuing all this bread that is going to be thrown away. You're turning it with volunteers, turning it into something, and then all the profits are going back to a charity. Tell me a little bit about Feedback.
So Feedback is founded by Tristram Stewart, who is also the brains behind Toast Ale. And Feedback campaign at all levels on the issues of food waste and how we reduce this, from policymakers to growers to supermarkets and to you and I, how we buy, shop, store our food. And they want to do it in a very positive way because we need to make a change. The statistics are frightening. A third of the food that's made for us is not eaten. And yet you referenced earlier, Sue, that we were having to look at alternate sources of protein because we haven't got enough food to eat. We do have enough food to eat. We're just throwing a lot of it away. And so a big part of what Toast Ale are wanting to do in a positive way, over a great beer, and everyone wants to know the story of why did this beer come about, is it will actually raise awareness of the issue and hopefully make a change in a positive way.
It's a really nice model. It's almost circular model. Just describe the label to me. So it's a very, if you go onto your website, which is toastale.com, really good to get that, well done, really short website URL, you can see the label on the website. It's just really simple, isn't it? And in a way, it's saying everything you need to say about this project.
Deliberately simple. We wanted it to stand out. If you imagine standing at a bar, you know, crowding to be served, and we wanted it to be really clear and recognisable, you know, within the fridge behind the bar. So it's a plain white label. We've got some little crumbs of toast on there.
And that's it.
And yes.
Can I ask you a couple of questions as well, Julie? From a business point of view, how much are you producing at the moment?
Not enough, because 24 million slices of bread are thrown away by households every day.
In the UK?
In the UK, every day.
Wow.
To date, we've brewed 25,000 slices of bread. So we've got a lot of work to do. But we've just completed our ninth batch. Our 10th brew is happening next week. So, we're brewing as often as we can at the moment.
Okay.
We're struggling to keep up with demand.
Okay.
That's good to hear.
Yeah. And do you have plans for how you're going to expand this? Because there's a lot of bread out there waiting for the treatment, obviously.
That's what we're working through. Yes, that's what's keeping me busy, is working out how we can scale in the right way to get a lot more toast ale available.
It's one of the difficult things for a startup quality artisan produced business, is how you go from initial concept into mass production. It's always the thing that all the guests that come on this show struggle with, is moving from one to the other. It's difficult. I want to come back to something that you were saying, though, which just fascinates me, that bread brewed beer is a many thousands of years old as a concept. Had we lost the art of doing it, or had people just stopped doing it, or are other people actually making bread beer?
Other than the Brussels Beer Project, I'm not aware of people regularly making bread beer. But actually, a big part of our initiative is to encourage home brewers to be creative with their own leftovers and brew some of their own bread beer. And as I talk to home brewers, I'm discovering some of them have tried it in the past.
Oh, cool.
Yes.
I like that. That's a really good idea, because that's cutting out the middleman, isn't it? Don't chuck the bread away, make beer out of it. Yeah, I like it.
I know that when you set up Toast Ale, you had an official launch, and the official launch was with Jamie Oliver and Jimmy Doherty on Channel 4's Friday Night Feast. So for those people who are trying to market their new food product, how on earth did you manage to get that to happen? Because that's a great start, isn't it?
Indeed. I mean, it was a fantastic start for us. And really, that timeline drove us getting our beer ready and for sale. And it came about because Jamie Oliver, like Tristram Stewart, is very keen to reduce food waste. And so they're a great ambassador for the brand. When we launched on Jamie and Jimmy's Friday Night Feast, our website crashed momentarily with the amount of visits that we had. And at that time, it was the only place you could buy our beer. But it was a great start, really helped us get the message out there.
Cool. And I know the beer's in Jamie Oliver's 15 restaurants, isn't it?
That's right. It's in Jamie's 15 restaurant, yes.
Yeah.
And it's in Hugh Fernley Whittingstall's River Cottage Canteen as well.
Oh, so that's great publicity. And I presume you leverage that as much as you can when you're talking about your product.
Well, actually, no. We to a degree. I mean, we're very proud of those links, but people love the story anyway. Who doesn't love a good beer, apart from Paul? So we don't feel we need to do that. What we want to do more is talk about the reason that we're brewing with bread.
I think that's coming across really strongly, and it is a great story. And what I really like is calling it Toast Makes Sense, and the label's great. And if you go on the website, it all hangs together really well. So it deserves to succeed.
It certainly does, and it allowed me to play some Toast. Cheesy tunes too. One last question that I want to ask you, Julie, is about how you're selling it. I know you're selling it in the London area. Are you wholesaling it? So are you selling it to pubs and shops and outlets? And can you buy it online?
Yes, we are selling it to pubs and bars and restaurants. You can buy our bottles online. We've also brewed our first cask beer. So in Bristol, there's a bar there that can pull you a pint, which is great. So we source that surplus bread in Bristol. It was brewed in the brew house and it's served on tap 2 metres from the mash tun.
Right. Wow. Oh, wow.
Again, that's food miles. Like it. Yeah. Sort of. Really, really like all that. Thank you very much, Julie. We're gonna play a little slot from the Allergy and Free From show, which is about juice shots. And one of our producers, Emily, was over at the exhibition and found these amazing people to talk to. And then when we finish that, I'm going to have a slurp of beer while that's on, obviously. And I think Sarah is too. And then we're going to talk to Sarah about boozy udders.
Sounds like a plan to me.
Perfect.
Shall we hear?
Yeah.
So we're here at the Allergy and Free From show, and we are with Harry from Big Juice, and she's going to do us some intense, apparently, juice shots using various ingredients. So, Harry, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hi, Emily. Right, what we're going to offer you first is a turmeric shot. Now, turmeric is... Basically, it's been used for over 500 years, and it's traditionally from India, and it's got amazing healing properties. One thing, what we do is juice the fresh root, produce a fresh juice, and then literally you drink it pure and get all the benefits from the pure turmeric fruit.
So it's only turmeric in here, nothing else?
Yeah, it's absolutely just pure turmeric. If I just give you a few benefits of turmeric... One of the main properties is that it's anti-inflammatory. Now, most illnesses, and especially internally, are caused by inflammatory foods. So having turmeric on a daily basis is absolutely almost an insurance for your health. One of the most popular things that people recognize in turmeric is that it contains a property called curcuminoid, and it's that property that people are looking for because it's known as an anti-aging, anti-cancer property. So that's what turmeric brings. Now, I'm just going to get the machine on so you hear a bit of a whiz, and I'm going to prepare a couple of shots for you to try, and I think that will be the best taste test for you.
This is all fresh turmeric, by the way. It's not like none of this dry powdered things. It's so out of I imagine some supermarkets might do it if you've got a little special section next to the ginger. So how much turmeric was that you just put in, roughly?
I would guess we put in about 6 pieces of turmeric. And for those who are not sure what turmeric looks like, it's like a ginger root. So we would put... Really, about 3 centimetres squared would give you a nice 1 ounce cup. Now, right, it's a beautiful golden yellow colour, and unfortunately, it stains. you do want to, no white shirts while you're.
Oh, that's a really thick, it looks like a kind of a milky, creamy sort of juice, and it's a beautiful, vibrant colour, and it does. Turmeric is quite well known for staining, and the smell is incredibly fresh as well. I wasn't expecting quite a smell from it, but it's really fragrant. So I'm going to give this a go. You ready?
Ready.
That's really interesting. I don't know what I was expecting. It's got quite a kick to it, but it's quite earthy and fresh. I don't know. I suppose a bit like a root vegetable-y, a little bit. Yeah, but with a spice. But I'm trying
it's quite
to
peppery as well.
Yeah, it definitely got that earthy sort of flavour to it. I don't really know how else to describe it. But I know, I like it. So I feel boosted already.
Yeah.
Quite invigorated.
I'm feeling healthier already.
Not sure, but just before you go, one thing with nutrition you'll find is that variety of colours that you have, the better for you. You may have heard of the rainbow diet. Turmeric being so intensely golden and yellow and orange, we're going to move to wheatgrass, which is very green. So, if you're brave enough, I'm going to juice a bit of wheatgrass for you and give you a couple of these shots.
Definitely brave enough. Really looking forward to giving this a go. I'm excited.
Wheatgrass, just to give you a bit of background, I mean, again, it's something that was probably pioneered back in the 1930s, mainly from a lady called Dr. Anne Wigmore, and you'll be able to read and discover a lot of information about her. In fact, they've got a big centre in Mexico, which helps healing of a lot of people, and they use just wheatgrass and a lot of juicing. But wheatgrass is literally plugged into every orifice so that you get a whole body cleanse. For those who worry about wheatgrass containing any sort of gluten or being, if you're a celiac, wheatgrass and wheat juice doesn't have any gluten in it. It's made from wheat grain, but we juice it as a baby grass, and at that time it's completely gluten-free, which makes it fine.
See, I didn't know that, so that's quite a good thing to, that's quite helpful to learn. So it shouldn't be scared of anything that says wheatgrass on it. It should be fine if it's all young and fresh and new. So it's before it's developed any gluten. Yep.
We have to use a special juicer, which is called a masticating juicer, and really...
So like a chewer. Yeah, chews with your teeth.
Absolutely, and because we're not cows, and we don't have enough stomach or strong enough teeth that we'd have to chew for days and days and days. So we're going to put it through the masticating juicer, which will give us a couple of shots, which I'll get ready for you. Now, it may look very small, but 30 ml shots is literally equivalent to eating a week of your greens. So it's like 2.5 pounds of vegetables all in one go.
That's incredible. That is incredible.
Yeah. That is quite a lot of green power.
So you only need one shot of this for a week's worth of your green vegetables?
Pretty much. But when you have green vegetables, there's only so much broccoli, so much spinach. And each green vegetable brings its own properties. So you'll have iron in spinach. You'll have a lot of vitamin C in another. The beauty of wheatgrass is that it has a spectrum of nutrients and vitamins, which its hidden property really is it identifies what your body needs, and then it helps heal it and replace it through that, which is why wheatgrass is so incredible.
And having this daily or once a week, a shot of it?
Daily, absolutely, daily. And what you will find is when you have this now, you'll feel very alert, energized. It's almost like feeding your body the best food you can, and then your brain is operating better, your mind is better, and obviously naturally your body is working better. And good health always starts with good energy, so...
So would you recommend having them as a shot like this, or including wheatgrass in other juice smoothies or vegetable smoothies, or just like on top of other things?
Yeah, I think just an intense shot is probably the best way to do it, because it's so... strong in its own flavour, that if you're trying to mix it with something else, it can really disguise it. So the best thing is knock it back neat and have something nice to wash it down with later, rather than go compare it all. But
well, I'm excited. My tongue is still tingly from the turmeric, but let's give this a go. It's an entirely different texture. This, it's not quite as thick. It's like a thin, more like a very dark green water, and it's got a good old foam on it, which we're not drinking. Okay, you ready? Cheers.
Oh, wow.
That's like, I think that's most like spinach, I think I could possibly relate it to flavour-wise. It's like a really intense, concentrated amount of spinach. I really like
so
that,
strong.
Actually. Yeah, I think you're a bit more of a sweet head than I am.
I am,
aren't you?
Yeah.
I quite like my savoury. I'm quite intrigued as to what they'd be like together. Would that make me some sort of superhero if I put the turmeric?
Yeah, we'll see you flying around the show. We'll spot you.
Thank you so much, Harry. Yeah. So you're from Big Juice. Do you have a website?
We do. Our website is Big Juice Limited, so bigjuiceltd.com. And we are based in Bristol, but we do deliver all the way across the UK. We don't do any heating, we don't do any pasteurizing, we make everything from raw and we freeze everything, and we use specialized packaging and couriers, and we deliver to your door. That basically means you've got a juice bar experience at home. So you take the frozen and use it at home.
And you don't just do shots, you also do big juices.
Absolutely. We do a whole lot of fruit, veg juices, and again, combined because of their nutritional benefits, whether you're looking for green cleanses or detoxes. But our website has over 50 different recipes, and we've got juice plans, which people can hopefully look into, learn about, read about what sort of foods are good for them, and drop us an email if they've got any questions.
I'm off to buy some wheatgrass.
I've genuinely got a bit of a tingle on, I think. Yeah. I don't know if like that's caffeine. Just because I feel like enlightened by the whole experience, or if the shot works that quickly, but I don't know. I feel like I've learned something, Harry.
Yeah. Looking younger.
Thank you very much.
Oh, there you go. That was Juice Shots. That was an interview we did 3 weeks ago now at the Allergy and Free From show. So I hope you found that useful. It's an absolute pleasure now to welcome onto the Food Talk Show our next guest, the lovely Sarah Ward.
Hello.
Hello, Sarah. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for asking me.
I'm sorry it's a bit chilly in here, but... we'll see what we can do about that. Well, Sue and the lovely Lucy are just bringing in some of your products. But while they're doing that, Sarah's from Boozy Udders. I can't even say that with a straight face, can I? Sorry about that.
I don't
think it's a great name, though. It's a fantastic
name. It is a brilliant name. It's an absolutely brilliant name.
It brings a smile to everybody's face.
Absolutely.
We've had a lot of ice cream producers on here, haven't we, Paul?
We have, yeah.
And people are doing some really interesting things, you know, non-dairy ice cream. That there was a producer we talked to at one of the shows who had their own cows and making a really fat... full cream ice cream, which was delicious. Lots and lots of stuff going on. But here we've got decadent alcoholic cocktail ice cream.
Wow.
Can I read out some of these flavors, please?
Go ahead,
Sarah.
Yes.
So we've got here, I've got here in front of me, chocolate brandy Alexander.
Uh-huh.
Can you tell that I'm actually salivating?
She is so excited.
I'm not a great chocolate lover.
Sarah, she is so excited about this. It is unbelievable.
I've got pina colada, passion fruit martini. Ooh, that sounds quite good. I'm a bit of a fan of martini. Jamaican rum punch. I've got margarita and strawberry daiquiri. I also know that you've got passion fruit porn star.
Actually,
is one of your flavors, or have you discontinued that?
Well, no, it is actually now what is known as our passion fruit martini.
Ah.
Well, I hate to say, we did start out as a porn star, and unfortunately, we had one or two people from trading standards and beyond who just had a friendly word in my shell.
Okay. That's fine.
Spoil sports, aren't they?
Because funny enough, Paul started off as a porn star too.
So absolutely.
I thought that about
you. Can see that, can't you? You can see
absolutely
that I would.
Got that in common. I'm also interested, you don't have it with you today, Whiskey McDaddy is one of your flavours. Tell us the story behind Whiskey McDaddy.
Well, this is actually a limited... McDaddy is a limited edition flavour that we do, and we brought it out last Christmas, and it was a huge hit. And it's a sort of play, or it's a development from a Whiskey Mac. In actual fact, a McDaddy stands alone as a classic cocktail, and it is a Whiskey Mac, but with an orange influence in there. So I decided to bring it out as being lovely whiskey, ginger. I decided to bring it out as a Christmas flavour. So it includes single malt whiskey, ginger liqueur, ginger wine, and then clementine juice. I wanted to have the connection with Christmas and clementines.
Orange, yeah.
So it's the orangey clementine thing going on there.
I always remember as a child, maybe a teenager, being taken to see the fireworks on November the 5th with my dad. And my dad always used to have... only on firework night, only ever, used to have a little tiny hip flask of Whiskey Mac. You don't see it so much now, but that's for anybody who doesn't know, it's ginger wine and whiskey. And it's just such a Christmassy.
It's warming. It's like being snuggled in a warm duvet.
Drink, yes.
So it goes fantastically with Christmas pudding, which is what I had many of our fans come back and tell me.
I bet they did. So, sorry, Paul, I don't understand how you arrived at making ice cream, bearing in mind that you have a degree in theatre and dramatic art and you worked as a professional actress and jazz singer. And just you talking, I can hear that you're a singer. You've got a very lovely sort of singing voice, I think. How did you move from that to ice cream?
Hold on. From that to alcohol, you mean?
I can see the link.
It's a natural progression, let me tell you.
My youngest son is at the Bristol Old Vic, and I can tell you there is a massive link to alcohol involved in that.
A lot of late night working obviously progresses into a last tot at midnight or whatever. Yeah, I know. Well, my original passion has always been theatre and that sort of thing. And I have always had I was brought up on jazz and blues. And sadly, as you get older, your acting career often wanes. And I found myself being moving across into music. And when I moved down from London to Kent, I was still doing music and had my own quintet and playing in various jazz venues. I had an operation on my esophagus, which stopped me being able to sing for a while. And I had children quite late in life. So I have two little boys. And by the time they both went to school, I knew I needed to start doing something again that could focus me, focus my enthusiasm, get me excited about working again. And I went back to what I should have said was whilst living in London, as my acting career slightly waned, I started thinking about what I really enjoyed doing. And I do have a good palate. I've always enjoyed cooking. I enjoy flavour. And I've always been interested in wine. So I then embarked on a career in wine and champagne, which then led me to a stint in spirits and liqueurs. And that's where I was trained to make cocktails.
So a mixologist, as they say.
I'm not as good as a mixologist.
I need to interrupt at this point, listeners, because Sarah is very lyrical and waxing very lyrical, which is right up Sue's street, because while Sarah is talking through here...
It's really good, because you don't have to ask her any questions.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, Julie and I are demolishing all the ice cream.
Julie and Sue have tucked into every pot of ice cream that's there. And
there's only six of them, though, to be fair, Paul.
Yeah, but you've eaten nearly all of it.
That's okay.
Delicious,
and they are. We'll talk about these in a minute. Sarah, please carry on.
Oh, I was just saying. I started working in cocktails, and so I am cocktail trained. But please don't imagine that I'm a mixologist in any way, shape, or form. That is a wonderful skill set in itself. All I can tell you is that I can make and put together a mean cocktail. And one night, I think we had some friends around for dinner, and I was thinking, what can I do? And I don't mind admitting that I was inspired originally by one of our homegrown, well-known, famous cooks, chefs, with lots of cookery books out there. And I saw a recipe.
You're allowed to mention whoever you want. Well, yeah, we're always indiscreet.
The wonderful, beautiful Nigella Lawson. And I saw a recipe for her margarita ice cream. And now, it was very nice, but it didn't have any alcohol in it whatsoever. It was lovely, but it was more like a key lime pie. So I thought, and of course, I think most good things in life begin with a margarita. So I thought, let's see what we can do with this.
She's the sort of girl to have around to dinner, isn't she?
Yeah, absolutely.
Or actually go around to hers for dinner. It's probably better.
Well, I started getting the old tequila out, slinging a bit in here, altering all the levels of everything. And that night I served it with, I think it was some hot chocolate sauce. And as you know, everybody knows that lime and chocolate are an amazing match. Yes. And everybody was blown away. And then I started thinking, well, what else can I do it with? So I started thinking of all my favourite old cocktails, and that's how it happened.
Wow.
Well, I've just tasted six on the trot there while you were talking.
She's eaten most of it, listener, I have to tell you.
And what's really interesting is you wouldn't expect this. You pick up a tub of ice cream. I think I have the strawberry daiquiri one in front of me. It's 4.6% alcohol. That's an ice cream.
That's one of the lighter ones, actually. They're mostly around 4.95. They're always under 5%, but they range between 4 and 4.95.
So if I eat one tub of your ice cream, I have to be careful about getting in my car and driving home.
It depends what you drank before you ate the ice cream.
but
good answer.
But the interesting and serious thing here is it's not flavoured ice cream, is it?
No, it's not.
It's not. It's an alcohol that's frozen and creamed, for want of a better term.
Yeah, I use real fruits and real juice. It's all handmade. So, you know, if I'm using lemons and limes, they're all hand squeezed and they're all real strawberries. There are no flavours in there at all. Mm. It's all real fruit, the alcohol and, you know, that's
I think what's interesting for me in the sort of taste profile. So I've had pina colada, the margarita, the rum one, and I've had all of them, strawberry daiquiri. What I quite often find is when people are producing ice creams or a range of food, they have a particular sort of feel or flavour all the way through. So they're a family of tastes, if you understand what I mean. What I think is interesting in yours is the texture's the same, and it's got a really lovely, unctuous, as I think ice cream should have, and slightly oily, you know, fatty, because you get from the cream or the milk. All of those are very different. They actually taste really different. So when you taste the Jamaican one with the raisins, it really tastes, you know, completely different from the strawberry daiquiri, even though it has the same sort of texture. That's quite unusual for me, because quite often you'll go, oh, well, I know that's a particular producer, because actually they all taste the same, but that, you know, they've got slight variations. Those are all really, really different. Is that because you're literally taking each one as a different recipe and completely making them from scratch in a different way to bring out the...
Absolutely. You know, I don't think a pina colada is supposed to taste similar to, a Brandy Alexander or a each cocktail. They stand alone as, I think, because I'm a cocktail fan, I think each cocktail stands alone as an amazing drink, but it has to be a very careful balance of flavours. It's, you know, anybody who makes cocktails seriously, it takes a long time to get their perfect recipe for what they think. It's got to be acidity balanced with sweetness, balanced with the fruit.
What's interesting with this is it feels like you start off with the drink and then it happens to be turned into an ice cream rather than the other way around. You know, I'm an ice cream maker and I'm using these different flavours. That's what it feels like. I mean, Julie, you've just had a taste. You tucked in fairly well as well, may I say. What's your thought? I find them slightly different.
Mm, they are. They're all different and they're all delicious. I must admit, my favourites are the fruity ones. Mm. So the pina colada. I am a closet pina colada fan. And I'm not that closet. I'm quite proud of it. And the passion fruit martini. And I love the fact that the fruit and actually the booze cuts through some of that creaminess, which means that, I can have two, three, four spoons.
Which is why fruit is so good with ice cream, of course, because it does cut through that you know, lovely sort of fattiness.
Yes.
Shame you can't taste these, Paul. You're missing out here.
I'm going to tell you very quickly a very quick story. A couple of years ago, myself and one of my best friends, I won't tell you her name. That would be not nice. We went to a concert, a music concert, and it was a very hot summer's day at the concert. And she kept dispatching me to the booze tent to buy her vodka slushies.
Vodka slushies.
Vodka slushies.
So it's just ice. Delicious.
It's just iced vodka, basically. Yeah.
Dangerous.
Yeah.
What's not to like?
Exactly, yeah. But the thing was, purely for my benefit, she said to me, look, it's a long way to the... So don't keep walking backwards and forwards for me. Next time you go, buy three and bring them back.
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah, absolutely. But it just struck me that something like a vodka slush... It's probably a basic, if you like, it's probably a prehistoric version of what you're doing, where somebody's just taken some vodka and frozen it, basically.
It's quite rough and
ready. Yeah, absolutely.
These are very sophisticated, I think.
And then Sarah's taken that to the nth degree in terms of making a much more sophisticated product.
That's very kind.
Yeah.
So, Sarah, when we look at, for example, you've got Brandy Alexander there, how are you putting these together in terms of, you know, deciding... You know, how you make the ice cream, how much of this you put in, where you get your products from, you know, from scratch. As you say, you're a jazz singer, so it must have been a lot of trial and error.
I really enjoyed trying, let me tell you. I've had a lot of fun putting these together. I think I always go back to the original cocktail recipe and I'll always study it and see the ratios of what a classic mixologist thinks should go into them. Because my tastes are not always to everybody else's. So I know what I think. For example, with a margarita, I know that I like it sharp with lots of fresh lime. But it has to be something that's attractive to the masses, obviously, and balanced. Yeah. So I will go back to the original recipe. Then I will have a base recipe that I think is appropriate to begin with, and then start adjusting. And as I add certain things, I'll take a bit of this out and or cut a bit down, you know, or add a bit more.
That's it. You have to capture it.
I know.
Consistently reproduce it every time.
And are you making the ice cream part of it from scratch as well?
Mm. Yeah. Oh yes. Yes. Oh yeah. It's all. I started making it in our farm kitchen at home. Mm. We live on the edge of a farm, and I had all the council in okaying the house, all of that. But he did say to me, if it gets above 20 litres production a week, you need to upscale and you can no longer keep it within the house. I think it's because it's okay to kill a few people, but if you start killing a lot of people
the council get
annoyed with you.
Get slightly iffy about that.
So we've now upscaled to a local, quite local, near Tunbridge Wells production kitchen.
Right.
So that's where we're at now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's the next stage.
And we try to I think your original question was to do with where we get fruits and things from. Mm. And we try and keep it as local as possible. And so there's a wonderful fruit farm near where we are. We get our strawberries, you know, as many
Kent,
of our
Kent's
fruits.
Kent's fantastic for fruit, let's face it.
Pardon?
Kent is the most fantastic county for fruit. Yes. Let's face it, it's great, isn't
Maybe
it?
Maybe not pineapples.
Or
no,
bananas.
There are not
thinking.
Many passion groves around those era parts.
Yeah.
But no, we're quite good at that. And you've got a rather jokey, I would say, packaging. So we've got Boozy Udders, which is a great name. And then we've got a sort of cow with a straw, sort of cartoony. And that for you is because this product is about fun, I think.
It's very about fun. And I had to think carefully. But the name did come quite early on. And once you've got a name like Boozy Udders, you don't go down the seductive route, do you? You can't be sort of winsome and seductive. I did think about the packaging. I sort of thought there's no reason why adults can't have fun these days. And I wanted it to be just a lot of fun, slightly tongue-in-cheek. But what is inside is quite, I hope, a sophisticated tasting, quite serious product.
Mm. Yeah. And where do you sell it at the moment? What's your sort of target market? What are you finding?
Well, at the moment, we have got a lot of customers in the farm shop and deli base, and we are still mainly around the south of England, moving up around the M25 now. Mm-hmm. But we've got quite a few starting, sort of coming in. Now we've got our distribution sorted. We have now got loads of interest from the north of England as well. We've just had Fenwick in Newcastle ring me up and say, how can I get hold of this? So we're now really moving up, which is fantastic. But I think, as Julie said, we've actually had distribution issues as well, simply because it's a frozen food product.
Yeah.
You can't sell it online very easily.
Yeah, sure.
And it's taken us a while to get that sorted out, but we think we're there.
Okay. So many producers that I talk to, small producers, are saying that distribution is almost the number one key growing problem for them, apart from this sort of step up from kitchen, you know, to using some, you know, factory sort of base. And it is ridiculous, but you'll find that the best distribution channels are all around, you know, motorway networks, because if you can't get off those quickly, then you can't make your product efficiently and you can't make a profit. So, you know, the distribution is something, if you're a small producer, you've got to look into that, haven't you, at an early stage?
Oh, definitely, yes.
And work out how that's going to happen.
And as Sarah pointed out, she has a product that can spoil quite easily as well. You know, it's not quite the same with beer, because beer has a longer life. But ice cream,
shelf life and storage is difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Although, considering it's probably stuffed with alcohol as well, that probably preserves it a little bit, really, doesn't
probably
it?
Probably lasts about 2 years, does it?
Yeah.
Great. So, what are your plans for the company? Again, this is a question that Paul asks a lot. You know, you reach the next level, and then it's another step up. It doesn't seem to be an incline; it's a step up to the next thing. What are your plans?
Yes, we do have lots of plans. There are several prongs to our approach. And what has been fabulous is the enthusiasm from farm shops and delis. And so that is one definite area. Events is an obvious area, because at the moment, I brought in the 125, the small individual pots with the little spoons in the lids. But
my God, is that an individual pot? Wow.
No,
huge.
Sue, that was six individual pots, yes, I'm
quite
afraid.
But they're quite big. They're stuffed full of alcohol. Can you have more than that? Wow.
We also, I think you'd actually be sick before
I think
you
probably
got
would,
drunk.
Yes. I think you probably would.
But we also sell in 500ml, which obviously is attractive to the shops and to potentially a couple of key supermarkets, which are very much in the, we hope, in the pipeline, but not just yet. We want to build our brand and build brand awareness a bit. Then we've also got restaurants that are now taking it in larger tubs and putting it on their menus.
Wow.
And we also have a lot of interest from private cinemas and theatres, which we're quite excited about. And that, I think, was always what I imagined or hoped for
market, isn't it?
When I first began them.
It's a unique crossover product, though, isn't it? That's the whole thing about it.
I can so see being at the theatre and having some of that ice cream because it just fits. Actually, that's genius. Totally genius.
Especially, you know, around here in Kent, we have a couple of cinemas, a Kino cinemas, which are private, digital, small, very intimate type cinemas. And this kind of product would work really well in there as well, wouldn't it? Do you, Sarah, sell retail? Things like festivals and stuff like that.
Fact, I mean, that's such an exciting area to be in. And there are so many wonderful festivals and in actual fact, all around the year. It's quite exhausting, I have to say. Sure. I have not had a weekend off in about 6 weeks, so right. I am quite tired. Right. Yeah. But it's all in a good cause and it's building the brand, so, you know.
So your website is boozyudders.co.uk.
Nice and simple.
Nice and simple. It's a nice website. Go and have a look at it. And you can find out where you can buy it, but basically at the moment, check out your local farm shop. If they don't have it, ask them why they haven't got it. I would say if I was having people to dinner, to have one of your 500 milliliter tubs and serve that, you know, after a meal would be lovely. You can't make stuff as good as that. So, you know, it's perfectly fine to
cheat on
that
one. Can I just ask a technical question there? If I wanted to sell your ice cream, do I need a license to sell alcohol?
It's a very interesting grey
area. A good question, Paul. Good question.
I was originally told no. I'm now told they're not quite sure and they're still looking into it. I'll get back to you on that one.
I just interesting, isn't it? I can imagine that was exactly what they said. Yeah.
And also don't forget, we've got toastale.com.
Absolutely, and we want to hear that website as well.
Yeah, toastale.com, nice and easy, and boozyudders.co.uk.
Are you guys on Twitter, Facebook and all that kind of stuff?
Yes, indeed.
They have been tweeting about the show, Paul, as we speak.
Absolutely.
So that's really good.
So give them a follow. That's what you need to do.
I'd definitely give them a follow. And it's great to have those stories, isn't it, behind a product, because it really gets you involved and makes them different.
The backstory is what really makes it come to life. It really is. In both cases, there's a huge backstory there that brings it into reality for people and makes it really, really even more interesting than they are as products in their own right, which they are. But that whole thing around it just makes it better.
And both of these products, I think, have got great personality. They're reflected in the people talk about brand, but the story and the personalities behind it are very much reflected in the product and the packaging.
I've had an idea. I wonder if we can make Toasty Udder ice cream.
Toasty ale ice cream.
Challenge. We're going to have to do some talking.
Yeah, yeah.
And some sampling.
Yeah. So, yeah, I can see them two going off having a sample after this program. Well, absolutely fascinating. And I guess the sort of, you know, the learning curve really is you know, have a really good story, be really passionate about it. I think your thing about you know, getting onto that television program as a little kickstart is a good one, isn't it? And getting the marketing right. And I think your background as well in marketing has helped. You can tell that if you don't go and get stuff sold, it doesn't matter how good the product is, does it?
No.
You've got to get the sales. And I think, as you said, I haven't had a weekend off. Yeah, but that's because you're doing selling. It's not just about making the product.
No, that's right.
Well, it's making it and selling it, isn't it? You've got to do both. That's the hard thing. Yeah, cool. So,
oh, it's great to be back from holiday. Oh, it's lovely.
You don't mean that, really.
I do. And all that was lovely.
So, I've got a glass of beer still sat there, which you haven't finished yet, Sue.
I might just do that in a minute.
I'm about to neck mine now, actually.
I thought you might. And there's some guys just turned up next door for a meeting as well. So I think
they might be stealing some.
They might tuck into some of the leftovers here as well.
Yes, it always happens, doesn't it?
Yeah,
quite
absolutely.
Right. No leftovers, please.
No. We're very good here. We definitely recycle everything that people bring. Trust
everything.
Me.
Let me tell you, Julie, everything goes here. Everything. In fact, we get quite a few complaints, don't we? About how much we've consumed during the show and not left anything for anybody.
I do get told off by the researchers, you know, can we now taste that thing that we've been working on and we've got these lovely guests for you and there's none left and they're not very happy, really.
No.
But it's all in, we have to do it on the show, don't we, Paul? We have to eat it all.
We have to. It's the law. It's a rule. Yeah, absolutely.
Great program again. Juice shots, don't forget as well. That was in the middle. That was
absolutely
interesting.
Yeah.
That's just about it.
So that brings us to the end of another food talk show, really, here on Channel Radio. You can catch up on the Listen Again and on the podcast. Do check out the food talk website, which is
foodtalk.co.uk, and you'll find podcasts and also all the information about Sarah Ward and Boozy Udders and Julie Preville and Toast Ale. So go on there and have a good look at them. And that's about it, really, Paul.
It is indeed. We will be back with you next week. Thank you so much for listening to the Food Talk Show here on Channel Radio.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.